There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
What up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and you, well, you've been nice enough to download, subscribe, rate, listen to All Ball, where we tell stories usually around hoop, sometimes around football or whatever. And this is a pretty well critically acclaimed podcast. I got to tell you, you're like, wow, you kind of fell into something if you haven't listened to previous ones. I do want to, before we get to part three with John Sundvold, as we got to broadcast and tell some broadcasting stories and how he got in it. And it's one of my more enjoyable ones of the hundreds that we've done. I do want to kind of get in on this story where, for example, UIC, there's been other leagues as well. You announce you're going to leave your league. And so the league, and I think James Madison also experiencing this in the CAA. James Madison is a perfect example. They're in the CAA and now they're not able to participate in the CAA conference tournament. And there will always be people, what about the kid? What about the kids? But what recourse do conferences really have? I mean, how can they, what are you supposed to do? Like, oh, you want to leave our league? I mean, think of James Madison, just for example, right? They're in the CAA. Last year, I was fortunate to call the CAA's conference championship game, which, wait for it, was at James Madison University. Now, James Madison has an amazing new arena. I'm just telling you, that's an incredible on-campus facility that's as good or maybe better than anybody at their level. You want to call it mid-major, whatever, at their level in the country. It's a beautiful facility. So you build a big facility. You got a nice town. The weather was great. All that's awesome. But let's be honest. There's the financial implications of getting to host your conference tournament championship. It's a huge win for the school, for the local area, and, of course, building that new arena. So you go from 6 months later saying we're going to leave this conference, which just gave us the conference tournament. That's what you're doing to the CAA. And so I guess what is the CAA supposed to do? They're supposed to take this terrible news when there is in the fine print of the contract, which binds you to a conference. You're supposed to take it. Does it suck for the players? Absolutely. They're getting caught up in what you would be called adult stuff, right? But again, this is kind of part of life. College is about learning life lessons and not necessarily having the repercussions of what that you have in real life, right? Kind of having quasi-real repercussions from what happens. So I guess this is my way of saying, like, I'm not sure what I would do if I were a conference commissioner and a school announced midseason they're going to leave our league, but I do get it. And what's the point of having these rules written into your contract, your conference bylaws, if you're not going to execute them? You know, it's like fines on professional players. Like, wait, we're not supposed to collect a fine? We collectively bargained, and then within the contract, if you violate said contract, there's a specific fine. Could I let you out of that fine? Sure. But the whole idea of the fine is a deterrent to ever doing it again or to anybody else to do it. And that's what this is. It's a deterrent. You want to leave our league? We can't hold you back, but we can make you hurt for doing it. All right, let's dive in with John Sundvold. This is part three. If you missed part one, part two, it's about his career as a basketball player, first in college at Missouri and growing up as a kid. and then in the NBA. Part three is about him as a broadcaster and having his own financial investment company. Here's part three with John Sundvold.
Well, okay, so part two, I want to get to your broadcasting career, because when we last left off, it was you deciding you just body couldn't do it, and you'd still go in and shoot hoops at Mizzou, and you still, you know, what am I doing? I'm missing it. But what was your game this weekend?
I had Auburn at Georgia.
Why? I mean, Auburn was very fortunate to win that game.
Yeah, they were.
Explain that.
Well, you know, they're number one, and they went on the road, and you know how that is. The number one, that, you know, they did play well first half. They were good. But Georgia, you know, Auburn didn't execute. So the best player in the country, or let's say top three, Jabari Smith, right? 6'10", shoots it, handles it. He had four shots in the first half. He had one shot with 3 minutes to go in the game. A couple guards for Auburn decided they would shoot every time down. So
it's a weird thing, because I've had Bruce on a lot, and I know Bruce really well.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, I think his actual coaching is wildly underrated. Like, he's a fantastic coach.
Yeah, he is. He is.
But the sort of the method to it is, it feels like he lets him go a little bit, but God, they take some liberties with it, you know?
And you know what? Honestly, they should have lost. And I say that because Georgia missed the front end of a 1-1 when they were up two. And on a tied game, kid goes, drives baseline, makes a shot. Potential 3-point play, he missed a free throw. So there's 3 points there, and they lose by a point. Now, that's all in the last minute of the game. Like, if they convert the 3-point play or make the two free throws to go up four, Georgia probably would have won. But, you know, Auburn survives, and they're really good. It was just one of those games. But it was fun because we were in person versus being out of the house, and Georgia was loud, and they had a chance.
I do think the league is interesting. You asked before we started taping if I was at Oklahoma State, because they took down Oklahoma. And I feel like Oklahoma State, in how they're constructed, feels like an SEC team.
Interesting.
You know,
why do you say that?
I'm in an interesting spot here where I do just about every league,
right?
You know, between radio and TV, and I'm always in person. And the leagues look and feel very different for the most part. The Big Ten, everybody's got a big guy and a couple of big guys.
Right.
And when I say big guy, I mean not just Kofi Coburn, but, you know, go look at Michigan. Look at, you know, Michigan State, not as thick as they usually are inside, but they're not playing small ball. You know, they're much more traditional, or maybe their traditional last 20 years traditional, where they'll play one big, but they all have a big. It's a much bigger, rugged league.
Yeah.
Whereas the SEC feels like much more athletes at every position.
Correct. Right.
You know, I mean, just dudes out there kind of flying around, getting after it. And then the Big 12 is kind of somewhere hybrid in the middle, you know, where I think that's what happened with Kansas, where Kansas is, they're just, the athleticism of Kentucky kind of overwhelmed them a little bit.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like Baylor and Oklahoma State, trying to think, those would probably be the two that look the most like the overall level of athleticism in the SEC. The difference is Oklahoma State does not have a Jabari Smith. They don't have a pro.
Right.
They don't have a dude who just win us a game.
Right.
And I feel like Kentucky does. I feel like when you look at the top of the SEC, they all have one, at least one, maybe two.
Yeah.
But okay, so then you look at Oklahoma, and Oklahoma feels, and how they play is a little bit more Big 12 to almost Big 10 style. And I just wonder I think he's a fabulous coach, and I understand it's only year one. And so year one, you're in the portal. You're just kind of shoving things together and trying to figure it out, but they're going to have to dramatic. I don't know if you can play that way in the SEC and survive, you know?
Right. Right.
Where you're loading up defensively, where you're, it's a little bit more traditional. And I don't feel like anybody plays that way in that league. And I think they couldn't get any good looks. I mean, Oklahoma State's so long and rangy, and Mike has been playing so hard defensively. Offensively, OSU is kind of a mess, but right. Defensively, wow. It's really a wow in terms of how much space they cover in the floor with how hard they play. And I do feel like that's, for the most part, that's the SEC that I've seen.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Now, again, I don't go outside the league any, although this Saturday I've got West Virginia and Oklahoma State. Just randomly out of the blue, we switched some games. So, yeah, the SEC is very athletic. And when you have those kind of athletes, it's on the defensive end, right? Sometimes offensively, it can be hit or miss on some nights on some of these teams. Talent-wise is okay offensively. Defensively, they play hard and they got great coaches, so they just absolutely get after it. So to find shots, if you don't have an offensive guy, if you don't have someone that can break somebody down,
yeah,
because most of the time, Doug, you know this, in the old days you had 3 and 4 year players that coaches, you learn to run offenses, you could be a machine.
Yeah,
they can't be a machine anymore. You only get a kid 1 year, you get a kid 2 years. Transfers in, transfers out. It's pretty hard to build a machine on an offensive end. Like a mid-major can. Like if they got dudes for 4 years, you know, Davidson or some of those schools you'd watch in the tournament, you're going, shit, that's a machine, right? They pass, cut, know each other. It's hard to do at the biggest levels. It's just hard to do.
So you get done playing. What led you to want to be in the financial sector? Like, how did that come to be?
Probably, I was a finance major in college, which didn't have anything to do with it, only because I started pre-dental. That didn't work so well first semester.
Pre-dental?
Pre-dental. I got done
with... What made you think you wanted to be a dentist?
Well, I don't think I did. There was a dentist in my hometown that said it's a good profession. And he's correct. Now that I'm in the financial business, the dentistry business is a great profession. And we have many dentists as clients at my firm. So, but anyway, he said, it's a great profession. So, you know, when you're checking the boxes as a freshman, you know, okay, I'll go pre-dental. With that, that made me a biology major. I hated sciences. So I got done with the first semester, wasn't all that successful. And I asked my advisor, what could I do with this biology degree if I'm not a dentist? And she listed about 17 things that none of them appealed. So then I slowly went to the business school. My first advisor in the business school is a management guy. I had a semester of management classes seemed boring to me. Wall Street was interesting to me. I didn't come from a family with money. I don't think my dad ever owned a stock in his life until later on in life. So that was the interest. And then when I got a little bit of money, even though I didn't make a lot in the MBA, I thought, well, what do you do with this? How do you make it grow? How do you? So it became a hobby. Like it became my biggest hobby was just reading about stocks and studying stocks. And so eventually I thought, well, this is probably what I'd like to do. Now I'm thinking this, I graduated in 83, got done in 92. In 1988, I got my investment license.
So how are you doing? How are you getting your investment license while you're an MBA player?
So in the summer times, I'd come back to Columbia. My wife and I got married in 86. So we had a condo in Columbia because I could work out at the university. Right. I wasn't anybody. Nobody bothered me here. Like, everybody knew me. So I could come back here. I could work out at the university. I could play golf. I joined the country club. I could do what I wanted to do here. And so a friend of mine was an investor. I'd play golf with him. He was a manager of an investment firm. And we just started talking about all that stuff. And he said something, he goes, why don't you get your license? So studied all that, got my license, didn't do much with it. I mean, I would come back in the summer. Obviously, I'm not going to try to manage someone's money or do really any of that. So in the meantime, really, I never thought how long I'd play. I mean, to me, I could have been done in 86, 7, 8, 9, right. Pick a year. So what I started doing, there used to be a show on PBS channel on Friday nights called Wall Street Week with an old man by the name of Louis Rukeyser. And Louis, it was a half hour program about what happened in Wall Street. I would tape it. I would watch it. He would have money managers on that he would interview. So there was times when I would travel and when I would go to New York, I might, I'd write down this name of a money manager. Then I would call that guy when I was in New York and say, can I come by and visit? And he's thinking, okay, John Sumbull, San Antonio Spurs. First, he's thinking, I probably want my money managed. No, really, I was picking his brain. So I would pick all these financial people's brain about what they liked about their business and what they didn't. So slowly but surely, in my back of my mind, I was trying to build an idea of what I wanted to do. And so honestly, that led me. One guy said, study manage money where you could hire money managers. Second part was study pension plans. So really, that was my expertise, so to speak, when I finally started my own firm. So I got back in 92. I worked for the firm that I was licensed with. You got to be with a firm to get licensed. So from 92 to 97, I worked for a firm. On October 15th of 97, I opened my own doors, which I had to have enough clientele, which really was, I was focused more corporate-wise, pension stuff. That was going to be my focus. And when I had enough clientele to be able to pay the bills, and I became a fee-only advisement firm, October 15th, 1997.
Fee-only means you charge a fee for every trade or monthly. That's instead of commission, right?
Yeah, no commission. So a fee could be an hourly fee if someone wants advice. It could be a fee based on the amount of assets they have. There's a variety, but there's no commission to it, right? So I always thought it puts my client on the same side of the table as me. I'm not getting paid to make a call to say, let's get rid of Intel, right? Let's get rid of Intel and we're going to buy Walmart. I didn't want my client to think, well, are you getting paid anymore? In my mind, I thought you get paid every day to make a decision on that portfolio if it's a client's, right? If we own Walmart every day, I got to think, are we keeping Walmart? Or are we selling it? Or are we adding to it? And so I thought if you did a fee-only business, I just thought that would generate better business for my firm. And then really my idea was to build a boutique-ish type firm that I didn't need to have everybody know what we did. I mean, I wasn't, the target client for me wasn't everybody. Like I didn't put out a shingle. I didn't advertise that come see us because I didn't want everybody's accounts. I focused more on the pension side. And then slowly as I built my company, I now have four financial planners that do that. My strength was in a boardroom in front of a board that gave me 15 minutes and then I had to get out of it, right? Or 30 minutes, like an interview.
Right.
My strength wasn't sitting down with Mr. and Mrs. Smith and talking about little Susie's 529 plan. So I had to find those guys that fit my world to do it at my firm. So slowly but surely we did that. But it was hard to start that way because when you're a one-man shop, here's where most small businesses fail. So in theory, you're a sales guy when you open your own firm, right? I represent. I'm a one-man shop. When you open your door, now you're the janitor, you're the accountant, you're the marketing guy, you're the compliance person with the Securities Exchange Commission who you're licensed with. You're just bogged down with everything besides doing what you do well. So that small businesses kind of struggle that way. And I did too, until I had a friend give me a little book called The E-Myth, Entrepreneurial Myth. The E-Myth, written by Michael Gerber, is a little paperback book. I probably went through that 100 times. Little paper just highlighting on why you're screwing up. How do you change your life to run a business so that it doesn't run you, right? So, and really the other part was the reason I was broadcasting, it paid the bills. I mean, broadcasting kind of paid some of my bills so that I could still focus on how do you build a company.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you first got into broadcasting, who was it who encouraged you to get into it?
Joe Castiglione. Well, the reality
you told
is,
me, you told me Joe C. So can I? Let me just real quickly tell you, kind of not Joe C. But Tim Allen.
Yeah, Tim. Sure.
So in 2000, I'm playing the Big 12 tournament. Okay, in Kansas City, and you're calling the games.
Yeah.
So we should have won the league. And we played Oklahoma the last game at Gallagher, the old Gallagher.
Yeah.
And we're leading at the half. We're up 9 with a couple minutes to go. We're probably like 6 minutes to go. And coach thought they were going to start fouling me, like hack-a-dugging me.
Right.
So he takes me out. What was weird, though, he took me out and he put Andre Williams in as a freshman, who was also a poor free throw shooter. But for whatever reason, one, he's big, so he doesn't touch the ball or whatever. We had, like 3 straight turnovers. They come back, and we end up losing the game. And so we go from – we probably would have been tied for first with Iowa State to finishing – I think we finished 5th or tied. We had tied for second with, like, 4 other teams or something.
Was that Tinsley or not?
Tinsley and Fizer, yes.
Yeah, okay.
And we only played them once. Remember the old Big 12? We only played them once. We put them up there, and they smacked us. We beat Kansas at our place by 33. They were pretty young then. Heinrich,
right.
Good, and Collison, all freshmen. And we beat the living daylights out of them. And then Oklahoma was right there. We split with them. I don't know if it was Texas. I'm trying to think. I think Texas was the other team. So all the strength was in the South outside of Iowa State. So we go to the Big 12 tournament and we got to play Kansas again, who we just beat. And we get there and our game was the first game of the day. So our shooting time was like 7 a.m. And coach was like, I ain't get up at 7 a.m. Anybody want to go shoot? And I'm like, well, I want to go shoot, Yeah. So I go to the Kemper, and we have the court from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. And Brian Lewinstra, who died in the plane crash, God rest his soul. He's their trainer. He came. Pat Noyes, who was our head manager, he was the DOBO the next year, who died in the crash. He came with me. And Brian Farr, who was our trainer. I think those are the 3 guys. Oh, and Jared Weiberg, who died in the crash as well, who was – that year was also a manager. So it was the four of us. We hop in an SUV. We go over to Kemper. And, you know, the first half hour, I'm getting a flop sweat workout. It was awesome, right? It just feels so good. And then we just started messing around. I'll never forget. OU had the next shooting time. And they had their trainer. Their trainer had been there forever. God, I'm blanking on his name.
Yeah.
Scott something. Shoot.
Wow.
But I just remember he came in the gym and it was like 7:45 and we had 15 more minutes. And I mean, this is like, you know, it's like the rivalry KU Missouri where they go, they're like, Hey, get the fuck out of our gym. You know?
Yeah.
We were unreasonably terse. So Tim Allen comes up to me right at the end of the shooting time. And he's like, calls me over, gives me his card. And he says, you know, we'd really like you to do games for the league when you get a chance, you know, whenever you get done playing. You just call us. So, and then he also connected me with Pete Durzis.
Yep.
And those are the two guys who initially and Bill Teakins, who died in the plane crash, is our color guy. They all initially like, this is what you really need to think about doing. Right. So it all starts with like, kind of. So was Josie, how did Josie tell you, hey, you should think about doing this?
So because Joe was assistant athletic director of Missouri at the time, when I got out of the league, I told you I did the radio for a year, 2 years, really 1 year, 2 years for Missouri. Norm Stewart said, you need to do radio for us. It's like no option. You're doing the radio. So then Joe C was like, you know, you'd probably be really good at TV. And Missouri Sports Properties had a package of 5 games.
Yep. So I did the Oklahoma State package. Yeah. Which was 5
and
games.
I think every school did. Now, the best part of the package was Missouri-Illinois game was part of the package.
Oh, it was. Okay.
Now, think of this. Missouri's had a lot of great broadcasters come through, not that graduated from here necessarily. Kevin Harlan did Missouri games. So my first partner in the 5 package TV deal was Joe Buck. Young Joe Buck. So I learned a lot because he knew TV from his dad, right? And radio. He knew the stuff. Joe was young, confident, cocky, which was great. I'm probably a little more humble on the side of I'm not going to tell some producer, don't show me that, right? Until I worked with Joe. Like Joe was my guy going, but that Illinois-Missouri game was, okay, so I did it once with Bob Costas. I did it once with John Rooney, who's the voice of the Cardinals. All those guys had worked for Mizzou in some form or fashion doing Missouri radio. So that was there's guys you're thinking, okay, your first guy's Joe Buck. Well, if Joe's not the best, he's one of the best ever. Joe Stiglione, Pete Durgis, you get this guy in the league, right? So they did. I mean, they called and like everybody, they're worried that you're a homer for your home team. That's what always the concern is. So the games I got initially weren't Missouri, which you're probably the same way. I don't think many guys that played are fanaticals of their team.
Correct.
I hope they win. Like, I hope Missouri does great. But if I'm doing a game, I have no, you know, concern.
I think here's where people struggle. And it's a little different because you have Columbia has been home for you, you know, but right. Most guys, you're connected to your team and your guys, your teammates,
correct.
But when they're
correct.
Gone,
right.
It's like, I still love my coach and my school.
Right.
Whereas when you're a fan, you don't see it that way at all. And so what a lot of people in management of these, they think of it from a fan mindset. I'll give you a hilarious one. Okay. Cause I want to get to, I know you called games for CBS in the tournament. When I was at CBS, I never did an Oklahoma State game and they had a couple of them on and it bothered me. Like I didn't do OSU Kansas. Like how could you not have me do OSU Kansas?
Right.
Like,
right.
I'm kind of synonymous with that game and that rivalry and even the shorts on backwards game. Like, that's probably one of the 5 most known moments of the Big 12. like in the history of when it was a 12-team league, like that was a moment.
Right.
But anyway, but they were very concerned. So it was my second or third year doing games. And it was my second year. And I'd asked them, hey, look, I know I'm down the totem pole. I know Nance and those guys, they get the whatever the biggest games are. Could you put me and Spiro Dedis in San Diego? Because the games are March 18th and 20th, and my son's birthday is the 19th, and I'm in Orange County an hour away. And you know how hard March is. Like, could I just see my kid?
Yeah, right.
You know, on his birthday, that would be really cool. You know, we'll do the best we can. So that year, Oklahoma State gets into San Diego. And they called me to like, and a guy who I really like and I really trust, and I admire a great deal. I'll leave his name out of it. He said, you know, I had you going to San Diego, but Oklahoma State's in it. I was like, so where'd you put me? He's like, well, Spokane. I said, well, you know, OU's in Spokane. He's like, so? I said, look, I said, you have to understand the 100 people who would think I'm a homer doing an Oklahoma State game.
Right.
There's 250 to 1,000 people who would think I'm the same homer doing an OU game. You actually didn't change it. You just kind of move the, it's the, you're going to have, you have the same exact thing, you know?
Correct.
They just overthink it. Whereas, and that's honestly one of the things that I always admired about your style, which is very matter of fact. I couldn't tell if you liked the coach, if you didn't like the coach, if you liked the player, you just analyzed the game and told the story and painted the picture of what's really happening here, what you should pay to. And it's the ability to disconnect from any sort of emotional ties to it. Right. I don't know if everybody has that, by the way, but I do think you do as good a job as anyone who's ever done it does.
Well, and some of that's personality probably.
Yeah.
So again, I'm the youngest of four boys. My oldest brother would say, I lost my sense of wonderment when I was a kid. Right. Like, you know, he used to say, hell, the president of the United States could walk in here and you would treat him like he's just another guy. And to me, he's just another guy. Right.
Right. Right.
And so doing
you lost your sense of wonderment as a kid. That's an amazing line.
And he's always used that because he's opposite. Like he's the firstborn. Right. Everything is new and adventurous and exciting. It's not a big deal to me. Now, what was interesting for me doing games was Kansas was always the dominant team, right? In this league. Right. Always has been. And I was on all those broadcasts. Like they were going to be on every Monday night once I got Big Monday. So if Colorado complained they weren't on Monday, so they gave them a game, it was going to be Kansas and Colorado, right? So I mean, whether it was ever a test to me, I had no problem doing Kansas games. And I got Kansas buddies that would go, God, you act like you like them. And I'd said, well, hell, they're good. I mean, I'm just doing the game, right? I'm just doing. And the you know, some people would ask, what's hard? Is it hard to do any of those games? I said, the reality is I'm going to talk about who's playing well. I'm not going to hammer the team that's not playing well. And ideally, I had a game a couple weeks ago. Let's see, who was it? It was Georgia, Vanderbilt, Georgia, maybe, where Vanderbilt played great the first half. Georgia played great second half. Perfect. I covered both teams well, and Georgia comes back and wins by 3 points, right? Perfect. I got everything in that first half about that team. I never had a problem with the Kansas. And you know what? Kansas fans never had a problem with me, ever. Ever once. Even doing, I did Missouri-Kansas games, Big Monday, and CBS. Kevin Harlan and I did enough Kansas-Missouri games, and I don't think there was an ever issue. I will say this, because I've got Missouri buddies, because I live in Columbia. I will always tell them that they listen to the game with tiger ears.
Yes.
Right? Every fan listens to that game with their ears, and they can't wait for that guy to make a mistake. You know, that's so-and-so. He didn't, you know, Gottlieb never liked us. You know, Joe Buck gets it from everybody. Yes. They think Joe Buck's a homer. Joe Buck could care less about anything of that, right? And you don't, and I don't.
But by the way, the Joe Buck criticism is that is a great litmus test. If you tell me, if you want to go something negative about Joe Buck, you officially told me you have no ability to evaluate somebody's play-by-play talent, right?
Right. Correct.
Right. Correct. That's really what you're telling me. It's like, trust me. It's like, we both know there's like 5 or 10 guys in the entire world that can do what he can do. Right. Correct. And so if you sit there and go like, you know, Joe Buck sucks, like, okay, let's do this. From now until eternity, you're no longer allowed to have any credible thoughts on broadcasters. That's what you've done to me. Right.
I'll tell you a good Joe Buck. And this is where I learned it from a young Joe Buck.
Okay.
We're doing Missouri, Illinois. And I don't think there's one of the greatest games ever. Missouri, Illinois played a triple overtime game. I'm not sure it was this one, but at the start of the game, in our ear set, in our ear piece, I could tell Joe's struggling because he would repeat himself. Welcome back. Welcome back. Like he'd say it twice. He's having
mixed minus in his ear.
Something was going on that he wasn't picking something up. So we get to the first timeout. I mean, and he just starts motherfucking the producer. You guys better fix this. I mean, he's going crazy. Now, I'm saying Joe's 25 or 6 years old. And I look at him like, Jesus, calm down. He said, no, here's the thing. It's only you and me that's going to be blasted for having to broadcast. And I looked at him and I said, you know, you're right. Now, I'm not quite that, but if my stuff's not working, I'm saying, hey, get this fixed because I can't.
Yeah.
I either can't hear him. I've got echo. I've got, you know, and you know.
I had a young woman
where you're doing a game. Sometimes you're doing a game and stuff's bad.
Yeah, his thought is that it's funny because I had a young woman who she's been elevated and she's really improved. And she had just started working. I was doing my ESPN radio show. And I kept having, she was working the board and it was like a mistake like every other segment. And it was the type of mistake where it was kind of screwing me up, like hitting the wrong piece of sound, it taking me to break a little bit early, just a couple of things. And, you know, she'd go, sorry, in my ear. And I'm usually like, hey, you know, I make a mistake every segment sort of guy. Like, I know I do.
Right.
So finally I got up out of my chair and I try and never get up. Like, I don't go to the bathroom. I don't do anything. Yeah. 3 hours. That's what I'm doing. And then I get up out of my chair and I go into the production booth. And I said, she's like, I'm so sorry. I don't know. I was like, listen, I understand. Okay. Get it. Okay. I do 180, 200 radio shows a year. I screw up. I was like, but when you screw up, I sound bad. When I screw up, I sound bad. Okay. So I'm in the process of trying to screw up less, but you got to stop. I mean, you got to stop fucking up. This is just like, again, I'm not saying you're not going to screw up.
Right.
I'm just saying, can we minimize? It's like bad shots. Can we take fewer bad shots, please? But that's the thing that you have, that people have to realize. Okay. So Joe Buck, the most, who else would you put, like, what's Kevin Harlan like to work with?
You know, the best. I mean, I'm going to say all these guys are the best. Kevin, if you know Kevin, he's kind of a quiet guy.
Yeah.
You know, simple, humble, as good a person as you ever meet. When the lights come on, that voice gets pretty, you know, it's animated. It was a great mix for me because I'm not that way. And, you know, just to be able to work with him, I think we did 4 years of the tournament, and that meant we were going to do 4 years with one or two games prior to the tournament, which was great for us and great for me because he was he's a pro's pro. And, you know, again, I'll say this about a lot of guys, nobody's better. I mean, there's a lot of guys to me that's nobody's better. And Kevin, because we got to do Missouri, Kansas, that was fun. He's a Kansas grad and I'm a Missouri grad. We did it in the right way. I think it would have been fun to do a game in another way. Like, it would have been fun maybe to do one of those Kansas Missouri games and kind of homer each other, but we didn't do that. That would have been kind of
that would be really fun. Yeah.
In today's world, you maybe could do it a little bit of fun because in the old days, Doug, I'll say, you really never even talked about your alma mater. Like now guys will say, well, you know, whatever highlight, they'll say, hey, my Missouri team's winning or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It has kind of changed. It definitely changed.
And back then you never even really assumed you were a Missouri grad, but
first tournament game you called.
NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
I was with Mike Gorman, the Boston Celtics, voice of the Celtics. Pittsburgh, Coppin State, 15 seed, beats South Carolina, a 2 seed.
That was your first game?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah. It's in Pittsburgh.
Oh, in Pittsburgh. Okay.
So, the great part about that, so the week prior, and you'll love this, I was doing the Big 12 semifinal. First game, don't remember who it was. CBS had the championship game on Sunday, the Big 12. And actually in 97, it was going to beat Missouri and won 3 days in a row. They're going to play Kansas. I do the first. So Billy Packer's coming in to do that. And then that's where they hosted the unveiling of the team. CBS did.
Used to be in Kansas City, right?
So Billy comes in there. CBS, I do the semifinal, the first one in Kansas City. I go catch a plane to Memphis to do the final of the SEC tournament. Now, back then, no phones, no stuff.
How did you do it?
Well, how about this? I get on the airplane knowing it's probably going to be Kentucky, and South Carolina is like one of the best teams in the country. I know nothing about South Carolina. Kentucky, you just know them by osmosis, right? I know the history. Not quite sure of the players yet, but I'll figure it out. On this plane ride from Memphis, KC, I'm looking at stuff. There weren't game notes back then like they do now either. I had a media guide that someone sent that South Carolina.
Yeah, maybe or the Blue Ribbon or something.
Yeah. So I'm looking through and I'm looking at South Carolina players. Like I know zero about them. I'd land. I get a cab to the Peabody. I walk in and Kentucky blues everywhere. And a guy says, hey, you know, knows me or something. And I said, hey, what was the South Carolina? How big South Carolina win? He goes, they didn't win. Georgia upset them. And I was like, holy shit. I know nothing about Georgia. So the CBS guys are there like, hey, we're going to go to dinner. I said, well, I'm not. I said, I need a TV in my room. I need the semifinal game tape of Georgia, South Carolina. I need the Kentucky semifinal. I'm going to order some ribs for rendezvous. I don't think I went to bed. Like, I don't think I went to bed because now I got to do this game that I know nothing about. Now, here was the good part, maybe. I'm working with Timmy Brando. So Tim, who's SEC guy at the time, he knows everything about him.
Everything.
And he tells me, he said, John, we're going to have a blowout. It was the same thing I was thinking of Kansas City because Missouri had played 3 games. Now they're going to play Kansas. They're going to get blown out. And they did. Close to 30.
That happened. We did the 4 in 4 days and we played. Yeah. It was two years later, and we just had nothing for that final fourth day.
Well, in my final at the SEC, it was a blowout. Kentucky beat Georgia by 30. So all we talked about was the NCAA tournament. But it was that South Carolina team then I had at Pittsburgh. Coppin State beats them, which was, I think, the first time a 15 beat a 2. And then
Fang Mitchell.
And then the next round, Coppin State played Texas, which was easy for me. And I want to say, I mean, it was Penders. Remember Reggie Freeman? I think Texas won by a point. Like Coppin State was close to going to the Sweet 16 way back then. So that was my first CBS thing.
My first tournament game was Pittsburgh, Jamie Dixon. Yeah. Steven Adams was a freshman.
Yeah.
They took on Wichita State.
Where was it?
It was in Salt Lake City. And it was actually a close game for about in the first half. It was a close game, and I think Lamar Patterson was Pittsburgh's best player, and he drove to the hoop and went by his guy, and as he did with his left arm, it kind of mistakenly hit Van Vliet in the face. Fred Van Vliet was a freshman in the face with an elbow, but he's going to lay the ball in, inadvertent elbow. And if you remember, and it's still, they've kind of changed the rule to where now it's a basketball move.
Right.
But back then, It was just, if you hit a guy in the face with an elbow, is a flagrant.
Wow.
So he had two fouls. He makes it and one. They wipe that off, call a foul on him. It's his third personal foul. And what was like a Pittsburgh lead, they wipe that off the board. Wichita hits a couple free throws, Patterson's out. They get beat by 20. And I went on this rant about how this is the dumbest thing we do in our sport. It was like my first, and I had done CBS games. I'm working for CBS, but it's my first NCAA tournament game. And you know how most, and I'm not trying to be critical of guys that call, but most of those guys, it's really CBS wants to push. It's about the stories,
right?
You know, about just the game.
Yeah.
You know, it's not really an opinion space in how they prefer the tournament to be. But I'm just me. And so
that's true.
You know, so I'm just like, this is the dumbest thing we do. Anybody who's ever played basketball knows you're going to catch an elbow. Yeah. You know, basketball is a contact sport. There's no way in which a guy is going to lay the basketball in and he purposely lines you up and elbows you in the face. It just happened. And now we take 3 points essentially off the board. We put the best player in a foul trouble. We stop the game. We review it 50 times over. This is the dumbest thing we do. And it got picked up on social media. So then the second game I did. So it's me and Spiro Dedis, and it's Southern taking on Gonzaga. And damn if Southern isn't tied with 4 minutes and change to go, bringing the ball up the court. And it's in Salt Lake, and there's 18,000 seat arena. So 14,000 people come to their feet and they're cheering for Southern.
Right, right.
And we go to break in that under four timeout, and you get the, hey guys, you know, we're coming to you. Now this wasn't in the world. It was Turner. So there was all the games were on.
Right. Different.
You know, it wasn't because you guys were doing games sometimes that nobody actually even saw. Right.
Correct. Certain parts of the country only. Yeah.
But you know, we're elbowing each other. Like, are you kidding me? We're going to do the first 16-1 upset. And Southern was amazing. And I mean, Gonzaga ends up losing the next game to Wichita, but that was my first session was Wichita takes down Pitt and Southern almost upsets Gonzaga. And you're like, wow, this is pretty fantastic. Pretty fantastic.
You'll like this one. My second year, 1998, I'm working with Gus Johnson. So Gus and I not only had the first weekend, but we also had the second weekend, Sweet 16, Elite Eight. And this was Utah that went to the Final Four. They beat Arizona. But the night before that game, we're going to dinner. CBS guys, I'm meeting them there, whatever restaurant in Anaheim. And I walk in, and over in the corner is Rick Majerus and George Karl. So George Karl's Sonics are playing the Lakers. They're in town.
Yeah.
So I go over there and have a seat and say hi. Those two guys are drawn on a napkin. Well, a cloth.
Triangle and two?
Yes. They were drawn.
No way.
They were drawn up. True story. Boxing one, triangle and two, and going through. And I sat there for just a few minutes.
The only story that would have been better is if you said, hey, Rick, you know, he's try. I'm going to do tomorrow.
Yeah, I should change it since Rick passed away. I should just make him a story. But true story. So George Karl, they're drawing this triangle and two. Knowing that you're going to give up a lot, and if Lute Olson, who's a great coach, he says, you know what, if they're going to kill us, but we got to try something. And George is going through some areas of where they could move these guys. So the next day, here we are at this game. They triangle to Miles Simon and Mike Bibby, right?
Mm-hmm.
Arizona got what they wanted. They got what they wanted. They got shots they wanted. Because you can, if you're patient enough, they should make them. They didn't make anything. And Utah just kicked the hell out of them. Beat them, just drilled them. And Arizona might have been the best team that year.
Yeah. But they were defending national champions.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a story that, yeah, I remember walking in and I knew George Karl, you know, NBA stuff, right? To say hi. And Rick was, you know, I'd just done their Sweet 16 game. And I think he offered the lady that he would buy the cloth napkin. She was like, no, you guys are fine. Like, it's literally, they're drawing on this stuff. Great, great story. I mean, that's pretty good stuff.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Those are the best. I always thought I loved the camaraderie of all the CBS guys hanging out and stuff. Yeah. But where I struggled with was they were like, hey, you should go to dinner with your crew, which I agree with. The difference is I like to go to dinner with the coach, you know, because you go into Kansas and Bill, like, come over and just have dinner at the house. You find out everything.
Right.
And so you get back from a game, like, why didn't you go to dinner with the crew? And I was like, well, because I went to Bill Self's house. So, like, yeah, like, we want you to go to dinner with the crew. It's like, really? Okay. But they, when you have the answers to the test beforehand, it's really fun.
No, my challenge on all of it was because I had another business, was when I got to a place, the game site, no matter ESPN, ESPN Regional, CBS. That was when I worked on the game.
Yeah.
So if guys said, hey, let's go to dinner, I said, no, I got to do my stuff. Like, I'm behind. Like, I'll be up. And for the tournament, it was the same way. I'd be up like all night to do those four, get to know.
Yes. Anything. Yes.
And I always felt naked if I didn't know everything, even though I wasn't going to use everything.
Yes.
But if I didn't know everything, which was really probably a downfall, because sometimes you've overloaded your circuits.
Totally.
And I think as a broadcaster, if you unload it and just do what's in front of you, right, that's all you need to do is what's in front of you. Now, you got a lot of stuff around you, and there's a lot of things coming in your ear, not your ear, or your play-by-play guy might be trying to fire a question at you that you're really not thinking about, right? Yeah. I think Kevin Harlan was the best always, that during a timeout or a break, he would always say, hey, what can I set you up? What are you thinking?
Yeah.
And I might be saying, hey, I'm thinking about Bill just put in that third guard and here's what he's doing. Instead of some guys ask you a question why you're doing the game, what that they're thinking, that you're not thinking. Like, you know, if a guy.
Right. And then it almost sounds, and when they ask a question, you have to like stop and make sure you don't sound like a jerk.
Correct.
Because that's not even close to what's going on.
That's correct. And
it is amazing that we're in the communication business. You're sitting right next to each other, and there are people. There can be a complete disconnect, and I mean it's very similar to kids in terms of players these days, right? Where players will. I had a coach tell me, like, hey, during a timeout, if I put 5 cell phones down on their chairs, they would actually talk to each other, but they don't, you know.
Yeah.
But we do that same thing in broadcasting. We go to break, and you know, you're talking to a producer about, hey, can we come back with? And this other guy's, you know, looking the stat guy. Where you're right next to each other. Just right. talk to one another.
Yeah.
You know, also a lot of fear, though, I think, because some of that backhaul stuff gets out. There is a lot, like, they cut, you know, like I'm a big, hey, open up my mic so we can all talk to one another guy.
Right.
And you have to ask them to do that now because some of that backhaul stuff it gets out.
But I think the challenge too is depending on the comfort level, the guy you're with, like in his job.
Yes.
Because everybody's doing an audition for the next gig, right? They want a bigger game, bigger gig. So often, not all the time, there'll be a play-by-play guy who wants to throw a little because he's been to the shoot around.
Yes.
Now knows that Kansas runs a 2-3 zone every once in a while.
So let me do the why, you do the what, you know? And we all know, look, it's funny. I'll give you a guy's name who didn't do that, but I want to get Roxy Bernstein on my pod. I think Roxy's a gem of a dude, and he's a very good broadcaster. But in his early days of working at ESPN, he'll even tell you, like, you talk about copious notes. Like, my God, Roxy, you would know everything. You would know the birth weight of every kid on the team, right, which is great.
Right.
But he would try and jam it all in there and just, you know, with play-by-play calls, get all these notes in. And I worked with a guy who I've always thought was very good at play-by-play, Dave Revson, who had the same amount of information, only he was much more judicious with how he put it in. And I think it comes from, at least for me personally, I told Roxy this, you know, I have a level of insecurity that, you know, I don't want that somebody's going to find out, like you said, like we didn't actually pay attention to every game, every moment, you know? So I want to know everything and not sound like an idiot, but you can't try and prove yourself with every call. Just like Rever taught, what we both learned from a guy named Dan Steer. Hey, get it in at the free throw line, get it in during a dead ball, you know? Yeah. Take your time. There's no reason to jam it in. Anyway, so like Roxy, I think he and I talked about it. Like, we did a tournament in Hawaii together. He's like, what'd you think? And I was like, hey, can I just tell you, like, friend to friend, like, you have all the information you need, but you don't have to get it into every broadcast. Like, leave it on the cutting room floor. And he's like, yeah, you know, it's just that it's a baseball habit where you have so much time to get so much stuff in. And I think he's phenomenal now. But yeah, it's the same thing with me in terms of doing color. And then you have the play-by-play guy. There's other guys that they want to be the color analyst.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah,
that changed. You know, the old days, we didn't really go to a lot of shoot arounds. Like, I might see the coach 5 minutes before the game, like as an analyst to say, hey, what are you guys trying to do tonight? Nowadays, everybody goes to shoot around, right? Everybody's there. I still think if I get the coach one-on-one, he's going to give me a lot more than if I go with the play-by-play guy, director, producer. They're still a little gun shy about what media will throw out there. Knowing a former player is not going to empty.
Plus, you've done it for years. There's instant credibility. You know, it's like I tell you what I do now. So now I do my radio show usually from the site of, you know, from the gym.
Right.
And
that's cool.
Yeah. And it's great because then you're like, you're not studying their shoot around. It's going on in the background or you're in a different room, but you'll pop in and see the coach. And it's just much more organic where they realize, like, there's a relationship there when you've done it a while. And it's not always the head coach. Sometimes you sit down with an assistant that you've known forever.
Right.
And they tell you everything, you know?
They do.
And then you just got to be judicious with how you put it out.
I think what people don't realize is how much goes into it's your group, it's your team, right? How you guys work together. Now, if you're with the same group all the time, it's pretty easy. But when it's different, and again, I always say like this with ESPN, everybody's auditioning for the next gig, right? Right. So you can overdo a lot of stuff. And I think that's the challenge, especially in today's world with younger broadcasters. That's the toughest part.
Is there a way to get college basketball to where it was? And by that, I mean, you know, it's like Dick Vitale obviously going through his cancer stuff. And I don't believe players today understand the Dick Vitale thing. Right. When I played.
Right.
And occasionally you would get what's called dicked, right? Which is you're getting ready to do a game and they're like, Vitale wants to do it.
Yeah.
And he does it. But it was a show in and of itself. It was so big.
Yeah.
So most times he would do the Big East, Big Monday game, or it would be Billis and Raftery with McDonough, then to you guys, you and Ron Franklin doing Big Monday. Right. Like that was the biggest. When we played on Big Monday, literally everyone I knew in basketball watched those games.
And the numbers were huge. The numbers were huge. Like viewership was unbelievable for that Monday night. Unbelievable.
Is there any way to get that back to the college game?
No, because every game's on TV, right? Every game that your alma mater, my alma mater play is on TV every game. So Monday night is not any more special than Super Tuesday, or there's a Wednesday, or a Friday gig, or a Saturday game, or a Sunday. Every game's on. So there's not a moment where you're capturing the country, which back then you did. You had that Big East, Big 12, Pac-12, or Pac-10, whatever it was, right? And those
when they had the Pac-12, or they also had Big West. There was a time there when we were kids and they had Big West was the last one on Big Monday, and that was a zoo. And it was always, you know, like UC Santa Barbara or whatever. But still, you had the three in a row. And you that's what I grew up with.
And I was like, if I was at Stillwater doing your guys' game, and I'm heading back to the hotel to watch that next one, right? Yes. To say, man, who's going to be in this? I mean, it was part of the Monday night was a big deal. It was a big deal. It was fun. Fun for us. Fun for Ron and myself, because you knew the Monday game. They put the teams on that game were going to be that was the game, right? Oklahoma State, Kansas, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, Texas, Kansas, Iowa State when they were great, Kansas. I mean, every Monday you walked into that gym and you were like, oh, man, this is fun. Like, this is fun.
You mentioned Ron. Ron Franklin passed away and you did Big 12 games for years with him. Now, he was, and I kind of pointed that, like, he lived in Austin. He loved the Horns.
He did love, and he wasn't a Texas grad, but he loved.
No, it was a weird thing.
Yeah.
Just give me one Ron Franklin story that no one's heard.
You know, Ron was a perfectionist in what he did, so he could be really tough on the truck, right? And if Ron didn't want to read card number four, he's not going to read card number four. But but they're putting that on the screen, right?
So for people, let me just explain for people who are listening to this pod. Okay. So all those it's called a read, promotions. You know, promotions, liners, whatever.
Yeah.
There's a stage director who's usually on the other side. There's four people at a desk.
Yeah.
Okay. The stat guy usually sits right next to the play-by-play voice, and then the stage director is either standing up or is sitting to the right of you and me, right? And they pass it, and the producer will say, "All right, you know, like John, lay out," which means don't talk. Lay out a run card four. So, and then they're going to put a corresponding, let's just say, advertisement, you know, like a full screen or a lower third of a promotion, Duke Carolina, March 3rd, Coach K's last game, whatever. Card goes to, so somebody hands, so you're sitting there and it's a really awkward thing. Oftentimes there's a hand comes across and here's the card to Ron Franklin. What happens?
So the worst was when ESPN was doing Season on the Brink, right? That was the Bobby Knight story.
Yes.
And we were promoting the heck out of it. I mean, it was like every commercial. Coming up next Tuesday, Season on the Brink. Da, 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 da. So we're Big Monday. And Ron's had enough of Season on the Brink. Like, he's had enough of promoting Season on the Brink. And every time it would show up on, here's on the screen, Jake Cutlow, our producer, would say, Ron, read card number four. And he'd hit his talk back, and I could hear him. I'm not reading. And Ken Dennis, our director, who you might know, Ken would say in my ear, hey, Sonny, could you just promote the deal? And I might say, hey, Tuesday night, Season on the Brink, Bobby Knight, blah, 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 blah. So this went on the whole game. And the best line ever was, came back from a timeout and the studio had it. They're promoting Season on the Brink.
Yeah.
Now let's go out to Ron and John. And it's still on our screen. And Jay Cutlow says, Ron, read the card. And I'm not reading the card. Read the card. Now, this is all going on.
Yeah.
finally, Ron says, well, then, OK, he says it's on the air. OK, then I'll just promo the promo. And he reads the card. And I just sit there going, oh, he doesn't like doing the promotion there. He didn't. But he was, you know, he was a perfectionist. And here's what he wanted. He wanted our game to be the focal point when it was our time. Right. We were just leaving the Big East game. We're about ready to tip off. Now, we could have a 2-minute opening or a 1-minute opening to talk about Oklahoma State, Texas. What a game we've got. Well, all of a sudden, Syracuse and Georgetown just finished, but they're going to interview Boeheim. Well, Ron's like, what the hell are they going to interview him for when it's our time to have a 2-minute open? Well, now all of a sudden we're down to a 1-minute open, down to 30 seconds, down to, hey, you're going to get it on the tip.
No on camera.
No on camera. And then Ron is MFing the people out east to go, hey, it's our time at 8 o'clock, our game, get it to us. And I always thought, you know what? Yeah, I'm with you. I'm riding with you. It should come to us earlier than to talk to a player and a coach. But you and I both know, I mean, Big East basketball back then was Big East basketball. But Ron was always precious to work with him. I mean, it was fun. And he had a tint of Longhorn in him, which I could never get because he was an Ole Miss grad. But he loved the Longhorn. He loved Rick Barnes. If it was Texas, Oklahoma State, Texas, Kansas, you know, it was kind of buckle up. We're gonna have a great broadcast, but it was always going to be interesting.
Give me a coach who you generally maybe didn't have a relationship with, didn't know, or maybe didn't even like, and then you got to know him and became a friend.
I don't know if I had any that I didn't know or like. Here's where my advantage was, Doug, is probably because I played in the league and not only played in the old Big Eight, but then played in the NBA when I came back. Every coach was very receptive, had great relationship, like Tim Floyd. I did Tim Floyd's first Kansas-Iowa State game at Iowa State. He called me and said, I'll pick you up for breakfast. And I'll never forget, I believe it was Jock Vaughn's team. Could have been Hoiberg. I'm not sure if it was. But I told him, I said, dude, there's magic in this freaking building you got. You're going to play great today. But, you know, things like that. I remember I did a lot of Oklahoma games, going into a practice. Kelvin, I had my sport coat on traveling. Kelvin called me out and said, if he makes 2 free throws, practice is done. Now, again, this is whole team standing there. I've got probably a button shirt on. And, you know, in your mind, you're thinking, well, this is easy, but this ain't easy. Like, these dudes are.
Button down shirt is not a quality shooting.
And you know, here are these guys looking at me. They kind of know who I am, don't know. I mean, I get it. But they both of those were all net. But I never really had a bad relationship with anybody.
I always say it because I ran into Billy Kennedy, who's an official.
Yeah.
Okay, Billy Kennedy, the African-American official.
Right.
So my junior year, again, you're calling the games. We were picked to win the league, and we were kind of disappointing. And again, we had that fifth place. We beat Baylor.
Right.
And then the next night, and that was the coach got fired. And then we played we played Texas the next night. No, the five played, they played the one or the four played. Now, if I think we played the one, we played Texas, who won the league. And it was Rick's first year there. They started 6-10,
right,
and they end up winning the league. And it's a really close, really physical game. And we're taking the ball out, going the other direction, at like right in front of Rick's bench. And I look at Billy Kennedy, and I turn to Rick and I said, hey, coach, doesn't he look like Danny Glover? And Billy kind of got, he got a little flustered, and then the whole bench is dying laughing. And Rick says, why don't you just shut the fuck up and play, you know, because it caught him totally off guard. And Rick was, and he was like, I didn't realize he was such a smartass for the longest time.
Yeah.
You know, like the ball would go out in front of him and he's like, I don't even know why you're in the game. Like, you can't shoot at all. Like, just talking a little bit of Norm Stewart in him. So I'll never forget, you know, I start broadcasting games, and my first year they had a guy, Boddicker, I think was his name, the big white kid.
Yeah, big white kid.
Yes. And he was one of those guys that every game there was a foul that was a little too hard, you know?
Right.
And everybody in the league hated him and thought he was the Jason Sutherland of the Big 12 at that point in time. And I said something along the lines of, like, the only people who like Boddicker are guys in Texas Orange. Everybody else hates that kid. And I said on TV, and I'll never forget, a couple years in, I went to Austin a little early, and Rick said, like, hey, you should go do yoga. And he set me up with a hotel, a place to do yoga, a place to eat. He and I met up for coffee. And I was like, this guy's the greatest guy ever. I had no idea that Rick was just a smart ass, like everybody else. And he pulls me at one time, we're having a cup of coffee, and he says, you remember what you said about Boddicker? I said, yeah. He goes, you know, the truth is, we all kind of didn't like him either, because in practice he would foul just as hard. And we're like, hey, same, you know, like friendly fire. But it's just interesting on how, when you unwrap some of the layers of some of these guys, you start to realize most of them are really good guys. They wouldn't be you can't be a head coach if you're not incredibly engaging and personable, because that's more of the job than the actual X and O's. And Rick's a perfect example of who I think is a gem of a dude. And I had, as a player, I just thought was kind of weird and kind of a jerk, and I had no idea.
I'll tell you a good Rick story. Did you play against TJ Ford, or was he before you?
No, he was after me.
Okay. So anyway, I'm doing a Saturday afternoon game, Texas and Oklahoma State. And then, so I go to shoot around. It's in the morning, because the game was at 2 o'clock or something, 3 o'clock. So Rick says, you got us Monday night, right? I said, yeah, down in Austin. He said, how are you getting there? I said, well, I'm going to drive tomorrow morning to Tulsa, and then I'll fly from Tulsa to Austin. He goes, well, why don't you just fly with us? I said, that'd be great, but I've got this national rental car I have to get back to Tulsa. He said, don't worry about it. Just meet us at the bus afterwards. So I park in my spot, Gallagher Iba, you know, really good spot. Have my suitcase or whatever I had with me, my bag. Wait for Texas to come out. Rick's going, y'all set? Got your stuff? I go, yeah. He takes my keys. He locks the car at National. He said, you got the National number? I go, yeah. Throws the keys in, locks the door, says, okay, now call National and say their car's in, you know, what is it? Lot C, parking spot 4, and you got to go catch a plane and they can come get their car. I was like, shit, this is great. So I called National, got on his airplane, flew with the Longhorns, and then Rick took me to the Marriott, you know, which, now here's another funny part. I used to tell this to my wife. ESPN Regional, I would stay at some little small whatever place in Austin, move up to ESPN, was at the good Marriott. If I did a CBS game, it was at the Ritz, right?
Yeah.
You know, hey, different size cars to rent, different. Yeah. I mean, everything was different. Bigger room, bigger stuff, everything, bigger food bills. And it was the same game I was doing, just a different network.
That's funny. I never forget, like, Dave Revson and I, we did a game in Vegas, and it was like I remember it was an ESPN game, and we stayed at like the Amera Suites, which is basically like in the runway of McCarran Airport. And I remember calling I was probably 28 at the time doing games, and I've been doing it a couple years. And so I didn't say anything to anybody. Right. But Rever's like calling them like, are you fucking kidding me? We're in Las Vegas. Like we don't need to stay at the, you know,
right.
We don't need to stay at the high, but you can't find us something better than the runway. But part of that is, I don't know. Part of it is the I actually enjoy it in the ruggedness of, hey, I really love what I'm doing. Right. I don't really care. Right. But there is a certain level of CBS always would send you a town car.
Oh, yeah.
That's what they do now, is a town car. And I remember I did an Oregon, Arizona game. And I fly into Eugene, and they got like a car service waiting for me. And I just felt like the biggest cheese ball ever. Like, I got a guy driving around. Like, Eugene's not the kind of place you need to. If you're in the city, get it. You're in Chicago, understood. Right. You're in Eugene, Oregon, I can rent a car and drop it off when I'm done. I'm good.
Well, I always I always rented a car only because I wanted access to go come and go when I wanted. And I really never took
the
car that they want to drive you. But CBS always had a lot more stuff than ESPN or ESPN Regional did back in the day.
Last thing. You've done just about everything in broadcasting. Do you, what's the goal? I mean, like you do it, you don't need the money.
No.
You love the game.
Yeah, it's fun.
You love calling the game.
Yeah.
But what's the, like, do you want to get back to doing the tournament? Do you just like doing, you know, the league and occasionally a Big 12 game? Like, what's your personal, if I asked you and nobody was listening, what do you really want to do in broadcasting for these next 5 years, 10 years? What would it be?
Honestly, I don't think I have an answer. I every year I think it'll be my last until then they call up again and say, hey, will you do 25 games? I'm competitive enough when I don't do some games I think I should do. But then again, I don't talk to anybody about it. Yeah, for instance, this year, Big 12 SEC Challenge, there were 10 games, right? 10 games, Big 12 SEC. Now, I think I'd be a perfect guy on a Big 12 SEC Challenge game. Did the Big 12, played the Big 8.
One would think.
Yeah, one would think.
Yes.
I didn't have one of those games. I had one of the two games that were the SEC games on the SEC network, right? So that's when you kind of get a little competitive to go, what the hell's going on here? Like, why wouldn't you? Is the goal to do more stuff? Not necessarily. There really isn't a goal. Could be if I made contacts to say, hey, I need to do more stuff. But we'll see. It kind of plays its way out. Every year, I kind of think I'm done. Every year, I think, well, that's probably enough. Now, what's changed is COVID, because we've done it from home.
Yeah.
It took 2 years. I haven't been traveling. That's pretty easy when you don't travel.
Yeah.
Now, when you go back on the road, you wear out. I mean, you know it. You get tired. But so far, I mean, I haven't worn out. And I think sometimes they're probably looking for younger people than me. But, you know, if I get good game, any game can be a good game. Any game. I mean, they had Auburn at Georgia went down the last bucket. The game I saw you, A&M in Kentucky, the atmosphere was unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
So any game can be a good game.
Well, I'll leave you with this. And I want to do some more storytelling and more pod talk. I'll leave you with this. There's three guys who call games who, when I started doing it, I said, I want to be a mix of those three. Okay. You and Billy Packer, okay. Yeah. You and Billy Packer were two, and I love and Jeff Van Gundy. Like those are the
right.
Those are the three. But what I've always been impressed by is obviously your economy of words is really good. You can say a lot, but while not saying a ton, the matter of factness of it, where it doesn't come across either too excited or mean-spirited. It's just this is why, and this is what I'm saying. It's just that there's an ability you have that very few people have to in the biggest of moments. It doesn't sound over the top cheesy energy, but it doesn't lack. And some people just, they've done it too long and they lack the energy, and you can tell they're kind of done doing it. It's right in the middle. And then you see things that other people don't, and you're willing to say it, but you also say it in a way in which it's much more palatable. I can come across, especially early when I did it, a little bit too harsh. I always feel like it's like watching film with your dad or with a coach where they're pointing things out, which everybody in basketball knows, but there's a way in which you gotta be. So you're like an artist with how you do it. It's really, really impressive.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. I know this. Some people like what you do and some don't like what you do. That's the reality of it, right? So what you said is makes me feel good, because I also know there's some others going, he's got a bad voice, he doesn't get excited. Yeah, I understand both sides of it. But, you know, we are who we are individually. And Joe Buck, I'll leave it with this. Joe Buck, and he's 25 years old. We're sitting, we're going to do Missouri game. They're out in Hilo, Hawaii. The game before that, we're just watching. We're just going to do Missouri game. And we're talking, and he says, hey, what? And I'm telling him, hey, look at the little lefty over there, right? And watch what he does. And Joe says to me, he says, just do that. I said, what? He goes, just do that. Because I was just learning TV. He goes, just do what you just told me. Just do what you told me about the last 5 minutes. And that should be how you do your games. You don't have to be screaming. You don't have to be this. So, you know, again, I appreciate your kind words because, you know, we do what we do. And you know this too, if the game is good, it's really easy, right? If it's a bad game, we're searching for something to get to.
Yeah, that's when the sports radio background kicks in. That's when you can be entertaining and, you know, you don't want to get yourself fired, but you have a little bit of fun. But yes, when the game is easy, but also when the game is easy, that's when you understand your ego's in check, at least enough as a broadcaster that you don't choke it, right? You let it breathe.
Right.
And you let the play-by-play guy do his job. You let the gnat sound do its job and you're just there. Again, like these are all things that if you've done it and you get it, I watch it and I appreciate it. And you had it a long time ago. You have it to this day. And I don't think everybody has that. And a part of it is most of us, there's no training, right?
Correct.
You're a player, you're a coach, try it. Oh, you're pretty good. And then everybody tells you after the game, you were great. No one ever gives you legit, honest, credible feedback.
Correct. They don't help you at all. Like nobody helps you.
No.
Well, hey, I appreciate your time. I do appreciate it.
No, that's me to say to you. So thanks. Hopefully we'll catch. I'd love to do this again as we get close to the tournament, talk a little bit more ball and tell some more stories. But thank you again.
Perfect. Thanks, Doug.
I hope you enjoyed that. That was incredibly fun to reminisce and tell some stories. And, you know, I do think that as we get closer and closer to the NCAA tournament, it's important to tell the stories of what it's really like to cover so many of these incredible moments. I do think that one of the things I've always admired about John and most people in our profession is that we cover the moments. We're not part of the moments. I think it's a very interesting thing that there are some people who cover the moments that think they're very much a part of the moment. I do not. I just enjoy watching it and relaying to people why and what really happened. A reminder, the Doug Gottlieb Show is daily, 3 to 6 Eastern time on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app, or SiriusXM 217 203. Make sure you tell a friend about this, you know, write a review, retweet it, send it to somebody. And we really appreciate you downloading, subscribing, and rating. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.